Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you, artificially intelligent Howard Finkel. As he said, this is PWT Talks NXT. And, you know, I've always wanted to be introduced by Howard Finkel. So I'm like, I wound up finding this AI, you know, where you could use Howard Finkel's voice. And I'm like, that's a great intro for the show. I'm Nate Lindberg. You can follow me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg. I do the NXT hits and misses, which I do have up on pwtorch.com for you guys to check out if you'd like to do so. And as Howard Finkel alluded to at the beginning of the show here, we do have a special guest with us tonight because neither Bruce nor Kelly could join me. So here we go with Dr. Kevin Peek Tanny. Kevin, welcome back to the show, man.
Guess who's back in the booth? I am so excited to be here. And yeah, for those of you that would care to follow me, you can find me at Twitter at KP Kitani. And yeah, I'm just so excited to talk the first NXT in the post Vince era. So let's rock and roll.
Let's rock and roll indeed, because you know what? We got a lot to cover tonight, a lot to cover. This certainly felt like it was a post Vince NXT because, well, as you said, it was. And Triple H, I don't know if he was necessarily back in the helm tonight. We don't have any, you know, real confirmation or anything on that so far. But to me, maybe like 45 minutes into the show, I said to Kelly and Bruce, I was like, am I the only one that feels like this is like a black and gold show again? And they both kind of agreed with me. It felt like a post 1 hour NXT when it kind of went head to head with AEW and it became a 2 hour show. It kind of felt like that kind of black and gold era, very high, high intensity, fast paced. There are a lot of different things going on tonight. And personally, I really dug just about everything on the show. I was actually really jazzed about the show tonight and the format change, the slight changes that they made to kind of speed the show up. I guess, I don't know, maybe it's because I'm an ADD kid, but it certainly held my attention more so than some of the other NXT 2.0 shows that I've watched in the past. This is probably one of the more fun shows that I've watched on NXT in a while, as far as I'm concerned, my personal opinion anyway. But before we keep yammering on and on about that, actually, you know what, Kevin, do you have any overall thoughts on the show real quick about that before we jump into the main event? And then we'll jump onto the phone lines, starting off with Reverend Keith.
Yeah, I was just going to say overall, I'd agree with you. I thought things tonight seemed to have more impact. And as you mentioned at the beginning, and I sort of number when I take notes, each kind of deal that goes on, and I have 20 segments by my count, you know, in addition to the matches and all the backstages. And even in
okay.
that, I felt
so,
like...
So, you know what? I'm actually going to give you a job tonight because, as you know, you, Kevin, know, I didn't know I was going to be hosting the show until a little after halfway through the show tonight. So I don't have a lot of the segments written down. So after we get through some of the matches, I'm going to have you pick out some segments that you want to talk about. So throwing that out there, but let you get back to what you were talking about. Sorry for the interruption.
Well, no, I'll wrap that up just to say I thought that even with 20 segments, everything seemed to get its own time. Nothing felt rushed. Nothing felt too long. Each storyline was able to breathe. And I think that's very much a testament to what Hunter's booking and producing strategy was prior to Vince and company taking over. So I actually was really kind of happy to see that.
No, for sure. For sure. It certainly felt a little bit, I guess I want to say fresh because I kind of felt like, again, personally, the NXT product was starting to get, you know, a little bit stale, at least for me. But because it wasn't necessarily the wrestling that I wanted to watch anymore. The developmental type show, I kind of missed, you know, the high intensity, fast paced show that we were watching. And it kind of felt like that again. It felt a little bit fresher. And I'm kind of, I don't know if I necessarily want to see a show this fast paced every single week, but everything seemed to get its time. Like you said, everything felt pretty substantial. The only thing on the show that, in my opinion, did not feel like had any consequences at all was Mandy Rose versus Saray. It was really the only thing on the show that, and I'm talking, you know, backstage segments included, that really didn't feel super important. There wasn't a lot of, you know, references to why the match was taking place and things like that, where everything else kind of got a story and explanation and time to breathe. So overall, I think it was I thought it was a well-paced show. I know Kelly and Bruce thought it was, you know, they both said in our three-way Twitter chat that it was a fast-paced show. But then Bruce also said, well, you know, I could be thinking of it like I'm recapping the show because, you know, they have to type out the recap as it's happening live. And that's not always the most fun thing in the world, especially if you're a slow-ish typer like myself. All of that said, I think overall it was a good show. One thing that really surprised me on this show is the placement of the NXT champion on the show. I don't know when I was going to necessarily bring it up. I was going to bring it up at some point throughout the course of the show. Felt like this was probably a good time. Bron Breakker, NXT champion, doesn't feel important. I mean, it feels like it should be, like, it kind of feels like it has some importance a little bit, like, you know, it's for a title or whatever, but it's by far the, like, not the most important thing on the show. And what I thought was really weird is they put the segment with him and JD McDonagh at like the 9:45 spot, or 8:45 rather, 8:45 spot, right, you know, first hour, hadn't quite hit the second hour yet. They weren't even like the mid-show main event or anything. I just thought that was a little bit weird placement for them. And then, of course, you see, like, Solo Sikoa in the main event. Everybody, you know, keeps talking about Solo Sikoa and, you know, going up to the main roster and all of that. And I think that's a great place for him to be right now in the main event. He looked like an absolute legend out there, super, like a superstar in every sense of the word, not the superstar definition that WWE gives us, but like an actual superstar. He kind of commanded the crowd. He looked great. I think he was probably the biggest presence on the show tonight, as far as I'm concerned. And I don't mean that lightly, because there were a lot of people on the show that had that presence tonight. Everybody really stepped up. I didn't really see anybody that, you know, was disappointing, I guess. It's a very good show overall. Before I keep talking on and on, I did say we were going to talk about the main event, but instead, let's actually just jump into the phone lines, because I'm sure some of you guys probably want to talk about the main event, so then we can just get into that in due time. So, as I said, we're going to kick the caller segment off with Reverend Keith from Baltimore. Keith, good talking with you. How are you doing tonight? Keith, are you there? I guess not. Let me actually try one more time here. Keith, can you hear us? All right. Well, I guess not. We'll come back to you, Keith, in a little bit. So we will then go over to, I believe this is Ryan from Cumberland. Ryan, what did you think of the show tonight?
It was a fine show. My first question for you is, have you finally got to see Triple H's influence on this show? And if not, when do you think that will begin?
I definitely think we saw either it was some Triple H influence on the show, or it was Shawn Michaels' influence on the show, which is kind of sort of like Triple H's influence. I feel like they have a similar mind for wrestling. Plus, you know, HBK also knows what Triple H wants, and you know what his vision was and things like that. So whether Triple H actually, you know, was either down at the PC tonight or was, you know, on a headset somewhere else on a Zoom call or something, you know, producing the show, I don't know. But I do feel like this was a change. This show was certainly different in a lot of ways that definitely seemed like there was a Triple H influence. Like I said, it was fast paced. This was we had 8 matches on the card tonight. That's a lot. We usually, even on, you know, these PLE EPLE nights, you know, like we get Heat Wave coming up. Yeah, we usually see maybe 6 to 7 matches, sometimes 5. So we had 8 matches on the card tonight. The last time we saw that was probably when Triple H is still in charge. I can't say that for sure. I don't know. I don't have that in front of me, but that kind of feels accurate. May have happened once or twice in the 2.0 era, but not that I can recall off the top of my head anyway. But yeah, there was a lot of that. And it also kind of felt like the wrestlers were given a little more leeway on the mic. And that's also something that I think I was reading on Fightful today, that, you know, wrestlers in general across WWE are given some more leeway with their promo ability or their promo in-ring promos, as well as the ability to call spots during the match and you know, work things on the fly rather than, you know, working out the entire match beforehand, kind of choreographing the match. So I think when I was kind of looking for those tonight, especially in, like, you know, Nathan Frazier versus Carmelo Hayes, that match just had, like, that Triple H vibe written all over it for me. So, yeah, that I definitely think there was some of that influence tonight. Like I said, whether it was from Triple H directly or it was Shawn Michaels, you know, with kind of that same vision, I don't know. But I definitely think that those changes are here. So, Kevin, your thoughts.
I would echo most of what you said, and I think one of the first times that Kelly and Tom had me on, I said then what I'm going to say now, and I really got the vibe as each batch of performers came out that, like, the pep talk pre-show was, let's go give these fans a show, and every single performer ran out wanting to be the best in whatever minutes they had. Like, nobody looked complacent, nobody looked motion going through, like, it looked like each person was like, okay, this is a fair shake, let me do what I can to get my niche carved out, and there just felt like a good morale energy to match the show energy.
And back to you, Ryan, any follow-up or your second talking point?
My second topic is on the contract signing, J.D. McDonagh. Did he use real blood when he signed his name in blood, or is there a way around, like, not using real blood?
So I honestly don't know, but I kind of think it was. It kind of just looked like it was a real cut, and then it was still bleeding after – when he stuck his hand out for the handshake, you could see the blood on his thumb. I'd have to rewatch it to see if it, like, looked like it was actively bleeding, but it looked like there was more blood on his thumb than there was when he was signing his name with the blood on his thumb. So in my head, that means it's still bleeding. So I would say that's probably what they did. There could have been, you know, like that, the pen that he, you know, I think it was a pen that he used to poke through the skin. But whatever that was, I mean, that could have been some sort of a gimmick too, that, you know, produces fake blood so he could smear it or whatever. But I kind of just think they did it the old school way, if you will. Kevin.
Yeah, I got the same impression. It looked pretty legit to me. And I would bet, rather than the pen he used being gimmicked with fake blood, I would bet that it was a pen that was gimmicked to be like a safety pen or something to get the prick,
almost like those lancets that they, you know, like you use to, like, check your blood sugar if you're diabetic or something
that. Yeah, something like that, where they could stick that in the tip. So,
yeah,
but also still not smart. In our sort of still not quite out of COVID pandemic-y stuff. Like, I don't know if that was a smart call, but.
Well, I mean, and not only that, but I mean, you know, not to get into, you know, other topics here, but, you know, monkeypox is a thing, and, you know, you're hearing, I don't know if it's necessarily, you know, true or not, but at least from what I'm reading, it's, you know, like gay, bisexual men, male to male, skin on skin contact, blood, type of thing, You know, so like there's that. There's all, I mean, not just that, but there's also other viruses and things. It's like, I don't know, blood. I'm so torn on blood and wrestling because growing up in the Attitude Era, I mean, it was a thing every single week, and it can certainly add to and enhance a story by a long shot. But by, you know, so like there's that wrestling fan aspect of me that, you know, that part of me that's like, yeah, give me the blood. But then, you know, you've got that, you know, actual real person side of me that's like, you know, that's really not safe. Maybe we shouldn't be doing that. So I don't know. I can see both sides of it, but I certainly kind of lean towards the, it's not safe. Let's not do that. Let's not do that in 2012 where we, or 2012. I kind of wish it was still 2012. Jeez. Not going to lie. 2022, where we know a lot more about bloodborne pathogens than we did, you know, in the 70s, 80s, 90s. Ryan, anything else?
Got any question on this Axiom? Do you think we'll be the person that gets to defeat him under this new gimmick that he's been doing under the mask as a superhero? Because I think that would give a heel a pretty good victory beating him.
Well, I don't know. I don't feel like he's at a point yet where whoever wins is going to, you know, get kind of like a rub or anything from it. They could certainly build him to that point, but like, you know, tonight, I mean, he just kind of got his ass kicked by Duke Hudson over and over again, and then squeaked out, you know, the smart win right at the end, which, you know, that's great. I'm glad he got the win. I wanted to see him get the win. And I thought it was, you know, kind of a feel good moment there, but by the same token, it didn't make me feel like, oh, this is a superhero. It was kind of like in that first Spider-Man movie with Tobey Maguire, where he gets in the ring against Randy Savage and basically just gets his ass kicked until he doesn't anymore. If I'm remembering the scene, right. But that's kind of what it felt like. It was just like this kid getting in the ring, trying to be a superhero, going up against the big dog. So I think that could certainly be a thing if they book Axiom in a way where he kind of feels like a bigger deal and more of like a unstoppable force, if you will. But I don't personally think he's there yet. Kevin, what about you?
Yeah, I'm very intrigued by him. I think he gave me a little bit of a Sin Cara vibe with his mask tonight. But other than that, like, certainly he's talented. I know that I did some reading on him, like, when they first acquired him and he was sort of breaking in. So, like, he certainly has the talent and the energy. I think pairing him with Duke tonight kind of played up the quick, fast, athletic versus the big bruiser. And I think that he will be a very, like, I can see him at least in the short term being a really good mid-card babyface that will, you know, contend for the North American and or sort of be in that picture where if there's a four-way or a three-way or a gauntlet, he's going to be in it because he's going to be the pace guy where some of the other guys in that block of performers are more the lumbering sort of power moves guy. And so I think we're going to see a lot more of him purely for the skill set he brings to the matches.
All right, Ryan, any follow-up or give you another one?
Okay, my final question is on Diamond Mine. I don't know if you would be able to answer this, but out of all the members, not to mention Roderick Strong because I don't think he would qualify, but out of Damon Kemp, Julius, and Brutus, do you think the best like amateur wrestler is out of the three, and who do you think the weakest link out of those three?
Ooh. In terms of, okay, I'm going out on a limb and I'm going to say Damon Kemp might be the best wrestler, but that I'm going on the fact that, you know, he made it this far. Well, no, wait a minute. I'm getting him confused with on the main roster. He hasn't debuted yet. Chad Gable Stevenson. I don't think Damon Kemp made it to the Olympics. I don't know. I don't follow like amateur wrestling, so I don't know. Like, I haven't watched any of their amateur stuff, so I really can't speak to that. But Kevin, any thought on that?
I was trying to do a quick web search, but all the commas and names doesn't do much for you. But no, I think that they all did and were fine, but like nothing along the lines of Brock's multiple championships at Minnesota or even Gable's championship/Olympic success. So they certainly, if you watch them, and I'm sorry, I still get these guys confused, not the singlet ripping down Hulk up Creed, but the bigger, stockier one. When he came in from a hot tag, and I think he tackled Stacks maybe, like he shot a double leg. Like you could just tell he's done this before. So I certainly think they all were accomplished in their own rights, but I don't think to anywhere near the marquee level that somebody like a Brock or even Gable was.
Yeah, I would, from the limited knowledge I have of their careers, I'm and you know, amateur backgrounds, I'd say I agree with that.
Well, and here's the deal too: if they had, the commentators would be blowing that up, and so that's another clue to me is if any of them had won national titles or amateur medals or anything, like somebody would be saying something.
Both of them have. I know one had won an NCAA title, and there was another. The other one won a different title, and I can't remember what it was and who won what at the moment. So I know they do have, you know, at least one kind of like title, one accolade under their belt there. But you know, wasn't like you said, it wasn't like a multiple thing, like, you know, like a Brock Lesnar or something like that. But I really couldn't rank them in terms of like, you know, amateur wrestling ability. I do know that they were very, very successful with what they did. So, so yeah, that's kind of really all I think we can say about that, Ryan.
Yeah. Thanks for taking my call.
All right. Not a problem, man. Not a problem. I appreciate it as always. So we will, let's go and try to see if Keith is there once again. So we'll go to, if you just heard on, and maybe I'm wrong, maybe it's not Keith.
Yes,
after
sir.
All,
but, I'm here. I hear you. How are you?
All right. Not too bad. Not too bad. We tried going to you a little bit ago, but either something was wrong or you weren't there.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I miss you, but I am here. Thanks for taking
right.
my call. It was interesting tonight, to say the least. First off, Dr. Kevin P. Catani, it's an honor from one doctor to another to finally have an opportunity after all these years to speak with you. How are you, sir?
Listen, I am so, so fabulous, and I would send all those adulations right back at you. I love your takes. I love your Twitter presence. I love your questions. So to be able to interact in this space is certainly an honor for me, too.
Look
Thank
at this.
You,
we got
sir.
A first
Thank
here tonight.
Two doctors, and I miss
Indeed.
Doc Bruce and the rest of the gang, but I'm going to jump right into it, then. I'm going to make it brief and to the point. I thought this show was interesting. It wasn't one of my favorites. I could see the variance in the format. I could see that the performers had more free reign, as we discussed last night about Raw. However, I don't know. It seemed like some of the matches were just thrown in there. And I think I read your take on PW Torch about how it took away, in a few of the matches, it took away from the psychology. You know, just it seemed like everything was just so fast tonight. And it was like they had eight matches. They just kept zooming, and they didn't give the wrestlers a chance to get into the flow of the matches. And some of the storylines didn't have an opportunity to breathe. And that's what I felt was the biggest weakness or downfall, if you will, in tonight's scripting of the show. Your thoughts?
So I feel like this is going to be a controversial topic and controversial. Well, I wouldn't say controversial, but like a little bit of a controversial topic, because I know, like, for instance, both Bruce and Kelly, when we were talking tonight, they pretty much shared your sentiments exactly. They felt like it was too fast paced. And you know, it could have been slowed down a little bit. Whereas like me personally, I kind of like the pacing of this show. I said this at the top of the show. I'm certainly an ADD kid. So I think maybe the more fast-paced show holds my attention a little bit longer and a little bit better. But so personally, I was okay with it. But there were a couple things like Axiom versus Duke Hudson, for example. I mean, that was only given 2 minutes, 9 seconds. Jensen and Gacy, that was given, I think it was like 3 minutes on the nose, give or take. So I think that one in particular probably could have been given a little bit more time. But that said, I think this fast-paced style is kind of is back, and it's going to probably be here to stay if I had to guess. As we were talking about earlier too, this with Triple H either back in the helm or Shawn Michaels, still in the helm, but without the confines and the restrictions that Vince McMahon and company would put on him, I think we're going to kind of see this fast paced NXT come back. Matter of fact, I was reading, it was basically a transcript of an interview that Kevin Nash gave recently, and he was talking about going down to NXT, and he was sitting in the gorilla, NXT's gorilla with Shawn Michaels. And, Kevin Nash just kept saying, "Oh my God, guys, slow down, slow down." He watching the matches on the monitors, and he wanted to see these kids slow down. And Shawn Michaels looked at him and he said, "Dude, no, they're doing what we're telling them to do. That's what people want right now. They want the fast paced wrestling." So that is certainly, at least as long as, what Nash was saying was legit, that certainly is the direction and the vision that HBK has, for the product. I'm sure that's almost positive. That's the vision that Triple H has for the product. So I think that's probably what we're going to be seeing going forward. As long as they're able to pace it in a way where everything kind of has time to breathe and everything feels important. And we did have a few things tonight, like I said, Axiom, Duke Hudson, Saray versus Mandy Rose is definitely one that I think could have used it could have used some tweaking. I don't know if it could have used some more time or what, but it just, like I said, it didn't feel super consequential tonight. But I think as long as they're able to keep the pacing, good and give everything time to breathe, they're going to be okay. It was a winning combination in, that 2 hour black and gold era. So we'll see, see what happens. I'm kind of high on this. I'm positive. I'm glass half full, let's put it that way. So, we'll see what happens in the coming weeks. But, Kevin, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, and as we said at the top of the show, I certainly what Reverend Keith is saying has merit. I would slightly disagree just to say that, even in sort of the fast pace, I did think that the things they wanted to breathe were given the time to breathe. And even the things that were short, you still got a chance to kind of see people work. So I know that tonight was a lot more frenetic than it usually is. And so as an academic, I'm someone who likes to look at trends. So we'll look at the next couple of weeks to kind of see which side they favor in terms of pace and match number and segment number. But I thought that today was definitely a return or a back in the direction of Triple H's running of the show. And I am also optimistic and very encouraged by what I saw overall tonight.
Optimistic. I think that was the word I was looking for, was optimistic. I couldn't think of it. And I kept, anyway, Keith, any follow-up on that or do you have another talking point?
My next talking point is the women's tag team title match. I am so happy that Katana Chance and Kayden Carter were finally allowed the opportunity to hold the tag team belts. I remember sharing this earlier in the year. I don't know if you were on the call, but I know Tom was still with you guys back then. I think it was the three of you. you, Tom, and Nate, and I had shared that I could see them positioning the KC gang, as I call them, or the KC crew, for a future tag title reign. So I was happy to see it coming to fruition tonight. I do believe that Mandy will probably soon drop the strap, and that will signal the call up to the main roster for Toxic Attraction. And I just hope that this tag title reign by Caden and KC won't just be a transitional one, that they will allow them to hold the straps at least for maybe two to three months. That's all I have for tonight. Like I said, I wasn't as high on the show as many others, but I do see that they are moving in the right direction, just like Raw. So we'll see what happens as we head towards Heat Wave. Chime in on your thoughts about the women's tag title picture. Thanks for taking my call. Have a wonderful week.
All right. Hey, man, you do the same, Keith. You do the same. A pleasure, as always. So for me, I thought this was a great moment when we saw, I keep wanting to say Casey Catanzaro, Katana Chance and Caden Carter win the tag team titles here tonight. I really, going into this match, I wasn't entirely sure what was going to happen. I didn't think Ivy Nile and Tatum Paxley really had a chance. I knew, you know, Yulisa, Leone and Valentina Frosch, they really didn't have a chance. So you kind of knew it was probably going to wind up between Toxic Attraction and, you know, the KC gang, as Keith called them a little bit ago. So I had a feeling it was going to come down to those two. Granted, you know, NXT, they could have thrown us a curveball, put the titles on, you know, one of the other two tag teams, but I really didn't think that was going to be the case. I think this is a great moment. Casey and Caden, they have been in the women's division now for, God, at least 3 or 4 years. I think it was the second Mae Young Classic, if I'm not mistaken, that they were both in, but I could be wrong. It might be the first. Regardless, they've been around for quite some time. They've been a tag team for a while. And they've been one of the only consistent tag teams in the women's tag team division for a couple years now, even before these titles were a thing. You know, there have been a ton of women that have held these, well, not a ton, not, there haven't been a whole bunch of people to hold these titles, but a lot of people that did hold these titles were just thrown together champions. You know, I mean, Zoe Stark, Io Shirai, for example, you know. So I think it not only is it well-deserved for, you know, everything that Casey and, I'm going to keep calling her Casey, Katana Chance and Caden Carter, I think it's well-deserved for everything that they've done, but not only that, it also just kind of feels, it's a feel good moment because we've kind of watched them grow up, if you will, and grow over the past few years and come so close to the title so many times. Kind of cool to finally see them win one. Now I know like Kelly and I think Kelly and Bruce too, neither one of them are as high on them as I am. And I'll admit, you know, they may not be the best in the ring, but at the same time, they both can do a lot of cool aerobatic and athletic moves that are flashy. They keep, you know, they keep people entertained, and they're fun to watch. So, and they both have a lot of charisma. Their acting skills, meh, you know, they could still be worked on, but they both have a lot of charisma. I think they make great champions, and I'm really keeping my fingers crossed that they also have a pretty strong run here, at least a few months. I think that they're with Triple H kind of back in the helm here. You know, those are his NXT kids, you know, they were around for his NXT. So I feel like he's going to probably give them a decent run unless there's a better story there. If not, you know, I think they're going to have, at least I hope they're going to have a pretty strong tag team title run and actually make those titles mean something again. Kevin, your thoughts on the women's tag division and its happenings?
Yeah, and I would agree with you. You know, I think one of the things that I sort of look at in title holders is the trust factor. you know, can the administrators trust that these folks are going to show up every day and come with the energy and take care of the titles and do right by the people they're competing with? And like you said, for as long as these two women have been grinding and doing the right things and keeping their heads down and just sort of being a solid tag team, I think this is a really cool chance for them. And I think, you know, part of me really kind of thought that they might put the belts on Ivy Nile and Tatum Paxley because I think that they're high on Ivy Nile. But I think what this could be is a give the KCs, you know, a good solid run while Paxley develops her character more. Like, I think certainly in that group, we know who Ivy is. We know what she's about. We know what she brings to the table. And Paxley's kind of the, you know, I say this with all of the love that it can be said with, but the 5'5" brown hair creator wrestler. Like, they just need to develop her character a little bit more. And so this could be that time to let her get some of that seasoning while Carter and Chance, you know, start running through some of the bad guys. And even I think we're going to see a lot of face-face matches because I think certainly Feroz and Leon are faces. And, you know, I think Nile and Paxley are probably in the middle but still shading face. So I think we're going to see a lot of face-face unless they're going to bring up a new women's tag team. But I'm excited. And I tell you what, I was impressed with Feroz and Leon and what they were able to show in the time that they were in. I thought they were crisp. I thought, you know, they're a team that, you know, were very much meant to be squashes when they first paired them together. But I think that they're maximizing the minutes they've been given. I'm kind of excited to see what they let them do, especially with sort of the new approach to the creative stuff. So I'm excited. You know, I think certainly you could make a case that Mandy's time should be over and bring them up as a faction, you know, maybe to either give SmackDown a women's faction or even to maybe let them bump heads with Bayley's new faction. That could be kind of a cool six-person showdown too. So I don't know. I think there's a lot of options.
You know, I'm actually glad you brought that up because, you know, at SummerSlam, it looked like Becky Lynch separated her shoulder. I know there were reports of that going around the past couple few days. And so there's talks about if she needs surgery, it could be, you know, a handful of months that she's out. If not, and it's, you know, not that bad, it could be about like 8 to 12 weeks, I think I was reading, that she could be out. So with Becky Lynch out, potentially out again for a lengthy period of time. And it looked like at SummerSlam, it looked like she was going to be teaming up with Bianca Belair, her opponent at SummerSlam, to take on Toxic Attraction, Bayley's new faction, which potentially could be called Control. All three women, Bayley, EO, and Dakota Kai, have all dropped hints on something on Twitter, and I'll use the word Control. So I'm wondering if that's going to be the group name. You bring up Toxic Attraction and let them, you know, run with Bayley and stuff. Granted, it does look like Bayley's faction is leaning, they're heels. They're definitely heels. So, but they're entertaining heels, which is great. So they could easily kind of turn face if you needed them to. Toxic Attraction, I don't think would really, they just don't work as faces, I don't think. So you would have to, you'd have to keep them heel, I would think. And then, you know, Bayley's crew would kind of do a little bit of a turn here, and they could still be like, you know, I guess they could be heels, but if they're playing comedic heels, you know, they're kind of the de facto baby face. So it could definitely work. It could definitely work. But yeah, we'll see what happens, obviously, with Becky Lynch up on the main roster. But I do think Toxic Attraction should be going up sooner rather than later. They're a pretty polished product at this point. It does feel like Mandy Rose's reign has just, I don't say run its course, but I mean, there's really not many people left for her to go against. I feel like Zoe Stark needs to take this title off of her, and we kind of ride into the next wave of NXT 2.0. So with that, let us hit the mailbag real quick here, and then we'll go through the rest of the card. So go to an email from Brian Alston. Brian says, hello, friends. Reading Kelly's live reports, I'm glad to hear that Caden Carter and Katana Chance won the NXT Tag Team Championship. They've been working hard since they started tagging together and using their innovative offense. I thought NXT would silently deactivate the title, so I was very happy when Alundra Blaze retrieved the trash can and Roxanne Perez picked out the second title belt. Greg Parks and I discussed the usage of Alundra on the July 30th, 2022 edition of Wrestling Night in America. She only comes back to replay the 1995 Nitro trash can incident. Question, who was more happier? Tom Stope when Zoe Starks came out for the Battle Royal, or Kelly when Dakota Kai came out at SummerSlam? That is an easy one to answer there, Brian. Kelly
is,
when Dakota
that is the biggest
Kai.
Softball ever.
Yeah. Yep. Oh, Kelly. It was all Kelly, I'm sure. I haven't actually gotten to Kelly about it yet, you know, just on Twitter, our Twitter chat. But I didn't get to watch SummerSlam live because I honestly forgot that it was on Saturday. I kept thinking it was Sunday. So I'm like at a friend's house playing Magic the Gathering, and then they're talking about, I'm getting tweets from, you know, them about SummerSlam. Like, oh, shit, don't tell me any spoilers. Definitely Dakota Kai. Kelly was over the moon. So was I. I was over the moon. I did not see that coming. Yes. Thankfully, I was able to avoid that spoiler. I was able to avoid most spoilers for SummerSlam, which is great. So I didn't see that coming. I actually jumped out of my chair when I heard the music and saw her come down. So I thought that was great. And Brian Alston finishes up by saying, don't forget to listen to VIP PW Torch VIP exclusive NXT Years Back, where this Saturday, August 7th, Kelly and Tom talk about two great NXT characters, Tyler Breeze and Adam Rose. They also talk movie trivia. This week's subject is Breathless Mahoney. Have a good night and go VIP. I have no idea what Breathless Mahoney is, unless that's just talking about Balls Mahoney getting blown up in the ring. They go into some crazy movies on that show. When Kelly, Tom, and I were doing the show, like after the show would get over some nights, even before NXT Years Back, two of them would start going into like movie talk. And I just sit here and listen like a fly on the wall. And I'm like, how the hell do you guys know so much about obscure movies, man? Like I tip my hat to them. Like I kind of wish I knew.
Well, and listen, I know both of their backgrounds are in production and film and acting. But I would agree, they have forgotten more about cinema than I probably will ever know.
Exactly. That's kind of what I meant. Yeah, like it's crazy. I tip my hat to them. Tip my hat to them with their crazy cinema knowledge. All right, we'll hit up one more email here from JB from Detroit. JB says that I really like the Solo Sikoa video package from tonight. My question is, do you think Sikoa is getting called up sometime between now and WrestleMania? I really think it will and should happen at this point as a way to inject some new life into the Bloodline storyline on the main roster. Pun intended. How would you envision Solo looking in or against the Bloodline, and what would that dynamic look like? Also, is it a coincidence that as soon as Triple H takes control, Kayden and Katana win the tag titles? What are the chances, with the rumors that Sasha and Naomi are on the way back, that the main roster brings back the women's tag titles and Kayden Katana challenge for them sooner rather than later? As always, love the show and go VIP. So, Solo Sikoa, I also really liked the video package from tonight. I thought that was a great way to just kind of showcase Sikoa, make him, give him a little bit of more exposure to the crowd, to the audience. But yeah, I thought that was a fantastic video package tonight. I really don't know when Sikoa is getting called up, because as far as I'm concerned, call him up now. He's a finished product. He's, as I said earlier tonight, to me, he is the only one on the show that comes off as a superstar in the sense of the actual definition of that word and not the WWE definition of that word. You know, he looks the part. He's amazing in the ring. He has that Anoa'i just swagger. He's a performer, and I think to call him up and either have him go toe to toe with the Bloodline or be a part of the Bloodline, he would be an immediate just fit. It would work. It should work perfectly. And if it doesn't, something went drastically wrong. I don't know if he's going to be called up before WrestleMania or not. Yeah, we've been talking about Cameron Grimes getting called up for like a year and a half now, and Cameron Grimes is still down here. So it's obviously tough to say, but it would not surprise me in the slightest if we got a Solo Sikoa call up either right before WrestleMania to pad some storyline or give some more life to a storyline with Roman Reigns, or directly after WrestleMania, again, to be involved in some storyline with Roman Reigns. That would be my guess. I do kind of think it might be a little bit of a coincidence that Caden and Katana won the tag titles tonight with Triple H back in the reins. I don't know what, you know, may have changed and what the plans were for the women's tag titles, both in on the main roster and down in NXT, because it is certainly strange that at the same time the main roster women's tag titles were vacated, the NXT ones were vacated, and you know, it kind of seemed like they might have been looking at getting rid of them. Don't know for sure. I don't have any sort of confirmation one way or another, but that's what it looked like to me. I'm glad they didn't. I kind of feel like the women's division needs a tag team championship at this point, because there has been one. There aren't many established tag teams, but there are a few. I don't know. I kind of like to see it stick around. Although having three sets of tag team champions in NXT right now is kind of weird, but that's beside the point. His last question was the rumor of Sasha and Naomi. Wow, I don't know why that was so hard for me to say. On their way back to WWE, will they bring back the main roster tag titles? I don't know. I would say probably yeah. I kind of would be surprised. Actually, let me look right now, because as of last week on WWE.com, if you looked at the Superstar page and you scrolled down, okay, it still says it, that the women's tag team champions are it's a vacant title, and that's directly on WWE's website. So they're still acknowledging their existence. I feel like if they wanted to retire them by now, at this point, they probably would have gotten rid of it on the title page or on the Superstar page where they show all the champions, and kind of quietly stop talking about it like, you know, they've done in the past. So I don't know. I'm hoping that they do bring them back. It looks like they probably will. And I have a feeling if, you know, the rumors are true that Naomi and Sasha are indeed coming back, I hope they have some involvement with whatever happens with the titles. Whether they just get them back somehow, you know, they just awarded them back or whatever, or they win some sort of a gauntlet or a match or whatever. I hope they have some involvement with them. And I personally would like to see them back on them again. I was a bit of a fan of what they were doing. I think they could have been doing some more. Matter of fact, I went to SmackDown in Worcester, Massachusetts back in April, and Naomi and Sasha were still part of the company. I think it was a few weeks later when everything went down and they exited the company. But I remember watching Sasha basically stand there and be a cheerleader for Naomi. And I'm like, here we are. It's not necessarily Sasha's hometown. We're not necessarily in Boston, but we're close enough. Worcester's maybe an hour and a half away from Boston. But you're in Massachusetts. And Sasha's not being billed as like a hometown hero or anything. She's basically outside the ring while Naomi was in the ring. I think she might have been wrestling Natalia, but I don't remember. I forget who she was wrestling, to be completely honest with you. But she was basically on the outside just being a cheerleader, you know, manager type. And I'm like, she could be doing so much more. I felt like she was underutilized then. And then it was just a few weeks later that, you know, the two of them walked out for feeling underutilized. So I feel like I've rambled enough about the women's tag team championships and Naomi and Sasha. Jesus, Sasha and Naomi. I don't know why that is so hard for me to say tonight. So, Kevin, let's see if you can pronounce their names and give us your thoughts on the tag team championship picture.
Well, clearly we need to come up with some sort of fancy portmanteau of their names so we don't have to keep having this problem. But I don't know that either way works so well. So we'll let that marinate. as far as Solo goes, you know, I thought I remember reading something from him where he basically was saying, I don't want to be associated with my brothers or my cousin yet or ever because I want to kind of do my own thing. Now, I think WWE is in a very – none of this is life or death, so I don't want to say precarious, but they're certainly in a position where when they call him up, he looks to – I mean, he is Jimmy and Jay's brother, right? Like biological blood brother, and they all look the same. And so it would be really hard to have them – to have him on the same brand and they like bump into each other and they're like, hey, who the hell are you? And like us believe it. And then to put him on the other brand, to put him on Raw, how would that play out? So I think they're in like, not necessarily, they didn't book themselves into a corner, but they're definitely in a situation of when they call him up, they're almost sort of handcuffed into making him. But like the storyline that I could see happening is that maybe Solo is the one that pulls main event Jay, I can't even remember who the one that kept resisting Roman. But Solo could maybe be the one to now pull the Usos back from Roman and say, hey, man, remember this, this, and this, and sort of be that light side force. So it'll be interesting to see what they do. I think that he won't get called up anytime soon, especially with a big win over Von Wagner tonight. You know, I think if they were ready to pull him up in the near future, that he probably would have lost something big like that. So I think time will tell, but I do think when they do call him up, they better have a storyline built, or it's just going to be the, oh, well, you're Jimmy and Jay's brother, and that's cute. As far as Kayden and Katana and Sasha and Naomi are all concerned, you know, I don't think that WWE is in a rush to bring the main roster tag titles back. You know, I think after the burial that was orchestrated against Naomi and Sasha, there's going to need to be a little bit of goodwill building to kind of bring them back into the fold and let them know that this is not just a changing of the guard, we're glad you're back sort of thing. Like, I think part of that burial was very unnecessary and petty, regardless of which side was more right or less right. And so I think, if anything, they need to do right by those two when they start bringing them back more regularly. But I don't think the answer is to immediately say, well, they were yours when you left, you can have them back. Like, I don't think they need to be a rush to bring that back, because I think at the main roster, the established tag teams aren't really tag teams. And so either use this as an excuse to create slash foster some legitimate female tag teams, or just have that be a division into and of itself and let it sort of build. So I don't think they need to be in a rush. I think you need to let Carter and Chance breathe on their own with the NXT tag titles and just sort of see if some organic building can happen one way or the other, independent of each other.
That certainly sounds good to me. I mean, I kind of agree. I don't think they're really in a huge rush to bring those titles back. I mean, it's not like they were really giving them that much time anyway. You know, those titles really hadn't felt important in a while. Maybe the last time that they felt even somewhat important was like when Carmella and Zelina had them. And even then, it certainly felt like probably the least important title on the main roster. So I don't know. Like when Sasha and Bayley held them originally, like I thought it was great. I thought I really had high hopes for those titles. So I'm kind of hoping they do bring it back. And when they do bring it back, that it's at the right time and they do give it some fair, fair shot. I mean, I feel like with Triple H back in the helm, or not back in the helm, but actually in the helm on the main roster now in creative, we have the chance to actually see some great tag team wrestling. He seems to be more of a fan of tag team wrestling than Vince was. So I feel like we're probably going to get some more tag team wrestling, some better tag team wrestling. Your tag team wrestling can certainly main event. I mean, look at the Road Warriors, you know, given the right booking, they can, you know, tag teams can be a massive, massive thing, you know, big draws. So I don't know. I think it's a good idea, good direction. I'd even like to see maybe a female stable or something like that, you know, more so than just three people like Toxic Attraction. I'm talking maybe like four, five, six people, you know, in a faction. Like, I miss those big factions like that. Like, we had back in the Attitude Era, but anyway, so let's move on, or we'll be talking all night about tonight's episode of NXT. So let's see. We talked about the main event with did we really talk about the main event with Sokoa?
No, not really.
We didn't.
So if you want to, we can.
Yeah, so let's touch on that real quick. So we had Solo Sikoa versus Von Wagner in 12 minutes and 25 seconds, with Solo Sikoa getting the win in a Falls Count Anywhere match. I thought personally that this was a great stipulation for this story. A lot of times you'll get Falls Count Anywhere matches, and you know, or not last man standing, no holds barred matches, you know, and they might fit into the story or they might not. But I felt like this really fit into the story, where the majority of their feud has taken place backstage. You know, whether it was I think it was a SmackDown 2 or 3 weeks ago where Von Wagner attacked Solo Sikoa, you know, backstage, where I don't remember why they were there, but they were. And so there was that. And then there was a few other attacks by Von Wagner on Solo Sikoa backstage over the past few weeks. So being able to use a Falls Count Anywhere stipulation to then be able to take that fight backstage again to where this whole feud kind of originated, I thought was kind of cool. It was a nice, like, just like it kind of, everything came full circle. That was a nice touch. And I feel like they utilized the stipulation well. You know, there wasn't like a, I mean, yes, sir, sure. They used some weapons and they fought all over the place and they went backstage and they came back to the ring and all that. But I feel like they utilized everything in a sensible and reasonable way. It didn't seem like it was over the top. There wasn't anything that made me just go, wait, what are you guys doing? Like, the biggest thing that sticks out in my head was Al Snow hitting Mankind with some popcorn and then Mankind selling it, or vice versa. I can't remember if it was Al. I think it was Al Snow hitting Mankind. But regardless, selling popcorn. Or a few weeks ago, probably a couple of months ago at this point, Mandy Rose, you know, selling a whole bunch of, like, glitter that Wendy Trieu dropped on her, or confetti or something. That's all kind of strange and weird, but is what it is. I feel like they did a great job tonight with the match. Von Wagner, I can't remember if he has had a loss in singles competition, but I want to say that he is undefeated in singles competition, at least as a heel anyway. So I feel like this is a good, like, this is kind of a notch in the cap for Solo Sikoa tonight, taking down Von Wagner in the main event of a very stacked show, on a show where the champion at Bron Breakker was not even at the midway main event and came in, you know, halfway through the first hour. I feel like this is a really good spot for Solo Sikoa. I mean, and Von Wagner for that matter. But more so for Solo Sikoa, because, you know, as I keep saying, he is the breakout star right now in that 2.0 class. It's, you know, Bron Breakker is maybe, but Solo Sikoa, he's a total package as far as I'm concerned. So any more thoughts on the main event, Kevin?
Yeah, the only thing I would add to that is I think what is refreshing for me is that Von Wagner has made, and now I just blanked on the manager's name, and he was such a big part of the early part of 2.0. But he needs a mouthpiece. And so he's made, and do you remember, what is his manager's name? I don't know why I'm blanking on his name.
Robert Stone, Mr. Stone.
Ah, Stone. Yes, yes, yes.
Yes.
But, like, to me, he's made Stone relevant. Like, now he's not the goofy sort of, I'm in control, but I'm really the lackey that he was prior to now. And I think they had a really good they have a really good chemistry. And I think that, that Vaughn continues to need the charisma and the talking that Stone brings. And so I really, that's what I really liked about that. But I thought both guys, like the impact of all of their moves, whether it was in the ring or out, looked real, felt real. I think they are two guys that probably looked at each other backstage and said, this might hurt after, but like, let's go out there and just clobber each other. Like, it just felt snug. And it looked like they could both take it. So I thought for that, for a main event, I was really happy with it. And I would just circle back to your point about Braun just to say, I wasn't as offended about where they put him on the show, because I think that they're operating with a, you know what you're going to get from him. Like, you know Braun's going to bring the juice. He's going to bring the action. He's going to make everybody look good that fights him. And so he doesn't need as much of the shine on this show when you're trying to build people like Solo and Mello and various people like that. So I don't know that I was as disgruntled by where they put him, because he was on the show, he got to speak, he had the belt. But it's like, no, we know what we're going to get from you. Just do this thing. And in 2 weeks' time, you get ready to show up when you've got to fight J.D. McDonagh. So I just wanted to circle back to that.
Yeah, I mean, I think you make a fair – you definitely make a fair point. What – but my kind of, like, I guess, comeback to that is they could have swapped, like, Brooks Jensen and Joe Gacy, or Alba Fire and Lash Legend with the Summit. You know, I don't know. I don't remember exactly how long that, you know, little meet between McDonagh and Breaker was. But, you know, let's say for sake of argument, it was 5 minutes. You know, Alba Fire, Lash Legend, that was 4 minutes, 30 seconds. They could have definitely swapped those two. You know, Lash Legend, Alba Fire, while I thought Lash Legend did an amazing job, and actually we'll talk about her.
Yeah,
we'll talk about that match next. You know, while I think they did a great job, and I'm, you know, that feud has been kind of brewing for a little while now between the two of them. I think that probably belonged earlier in the show. And then you take your champion and put him before the main event. That seems like I'm in the camp of, you always want your champion to be last. And if it's not last, second to last. You know, sometimes you'll have something bigger going on last, you know, like, you know, like in WrestleMania, you know, maybe it was an Undertaker match or something like that, you know? So that's just me. I mean, it's more of a nitpick than anything, but
yeah.
It just, I don't know. It stood out to me that it was like, you know, with Eastern time, it was like 8:40 and Braun Breaker was showing up. I would have kind of expected that to be, you know, either at the 9 o'clock hour or, you know, closer to the main event, or open the show with that, you know? But yeah, honestly, we've talked more about it than I guess I care about it, really.
Well, I would come back to you only to say, as I look at the way the show laid out, the three major women's matches were beginning, middle, and end. So
yeah.
I don't know that I would have switched Alba, the Alba Legend match with Braun, because then you've got basically two women's matches back to back, and you have all three of them in the first hour. So I think there was a good spread of the major women's matches. And again, I think to have Braun early in the show lets the rest of the show breathe, because what that built to was Vaughn and Solo. It gave Joe Gacy and Jensen their own time. It gave Tony D'Angelo's group and Diamond Mine their own time. And like, let those occupy a bulk of the second hour. So I would say I actually thought it was spaced out pretty well,
all
the while conceding that, yeah, you want your champion to be front and center, but I think this is not a champion they're worried about building. He's built, and what you see is what you get. So let's have him on. Let's have him talk. But like, what they wanted to focus on was more of that in-ring action now that more people are going to get more time to shine.
All right. I think you made your case. I think you talked me into it. All right. Okay. All right. I'll go along with that. I will go along with that. It makes sense. You know, it like, I guess personally, I still would have liked to see it, but like where you're kind of laying it out for me here, I guess it does kind of make sense. It gives everybody else a bit of time to breathe and feel more important. So I can take that. I can take that analysis there. Works for me. All right. So actually, we said we were going to talk about Alba Fire, Lash Legends. Let's do that next. So we saw the two of them go at it for 4 minutes and 30 seconds, approximately, according to Kelly's notes here. It has the approximately sign squiggle next to it. We did see Alba Fire pick up the win here. Lash, and as I said earlier, this is a feud that's been building for a few weeks now. Mostly in backstage segments with Alba Fire. Well, actually, there was one where Alba Fire attacked Lash Legend, and there was one where Lash Legend attacked Alba Fire with Alba Fire's bat. So it's kind of coming to a head. We finally saw it happen here tonight. I got to say, I was really impressed with Lash Legend. She's been improving every single time she's been in the ring. When she first debuted, I was not impressed. I did not like the whole lashing out with Lash Legend, that whole talk show segment that she had. I thought that was absolutely abysmal. But this whole kind of retweak to her character that they've been doing over the past handful of months where, she's kind of now a little bit more loud, outspoken. Not that she wasn't as a TV show host, but still, she just kind of seems like she's a more serious character, I guess, put it that way. Which I think is a great move, great character direction for her. But the biggest thing is her in-ring performance. At first she was really clunky, you could kind of see, the cracks and things in her ring work. Whereas tonight, I thought she looked great. She was really crisp, really clean. When she was taking bumps, she was snapping right down to the mat. She may have lost here tonight, but I think, at least in my eyes, I know in Kevin Kelly and Bruce's eyes, that, she has certainly improved, and we're certainly happy to see that. So I think that was great. Alba Fire is good as always. And I think that's probably why Lash Legend had a great match. Put a newbie with a veteran, and Alba Fire, she's been doing this for a very long time. And she's one of the best they have on the female roster in NXT right now. So of course you're going to have, as long as they've got some chemistry, you're going to have a good match. So I feel like that was a great real, it's not really her first opponent, Lash Legend's first opponent, but I'm kind of like in my head considering it Lash Legend's first real opponent. She's had some matches and feuds in the past, like with Nikita Lyons and stuff, but they were still trying to flesh out her gimmick back then. Now they've kind of got a solid working gimmick. And this is really the first feud with that gimmick that I feel like she's going to probably latch onto for the foreseeable future. So I think for a first real opponent for her, this was a great choice. Kaylee Ray, led her through a great match. And I don't think this feud's necessarily over. Lash Legend, I feel like, is probably not going to take this loss lying down, and we're probably going to see at least one more rematch between the two, potentially at Heatwave. But if not, probably within the next few weeks on NXT TV. On the Lash Legend Alba Fire match, Kevin.
Yeah, I would agree wholeheartedly that Lash definitely looks like she's putting work in. And again, as they've documented before, she was a professional athlete in the WNBA. So she's not a stranger to the weight room and extra practice and extra reps. And I think it's showing itself, especially tonight. I was happy to see Alba get the W. I think that if Mandy does drop the belt here, I really see Alba as like the let's keep her warm as the first heel to Zoe as like a challenge to the belt. And I would love to see that, because I think that Alba is a great, great champion. She was a fabulous NXT UK women's champ. And I think she's got that sort of connection with the crowd and would make for a great first heel if Zoe does win the belt from Mandy. And so I'll just sort of be interested. I'm sure they'll run it back next week or maybe the week after. You're right. I don't think the feud is over, but I think Alba will come out as the winner of the overall feud. And I think that she will, because they want to keep her warm to get into the title hunt once the belt switches hands.
And of course the dreaded mute button is my enemy again. I agree. I think Alba Fyre is definitely ready for the main. I mean, she's been ready for the main event since she came to NXT. I mean, heck, when she came to NXT from NXT UK, it was immediately inserted into the main event. So, it still is Kaylee Ray, of course, but, I don't think it's a bad idea. I think she's, not only well-deserved, but she's really the only one other than Zoe Stark that I can think of on the main, on the female roster in NXT that feels like any sort of a challenge for Mandy Rose right now, which is still weird to say that Mandy Rose is like the strongest competitor, female division NXT, but regardless she is. So, but yeah, I can't say disagree with anything that you said there. So let's move on. We'll go to Brooks Jensen versus Joe Gacy in 2:59. This match kind of came about where earlier in the night, the NXT UK tag team champions, Brooks Jensen and Josh Briggs, were backstage getting interviewed when Joe Gacy and the Dyad interrupted. Some back and forth between the two factions, the two tag teams. Jensen was kind of the butt of a lot of I wanted to say jokes, but not really jokes, insults, I guess, from Joe Gacy, which kind of led into this match here tonight. It was, I can't even really call this a match. It was a match. It was 2:59. It wasn't really the wrestling itself wasn't bad, but there was just a lot of shenanigans that went on here. You had a pretty deadly rundown, shortly before the end of the match, to interject themselves. You had Josh Briggs trying to interfere. You had the Dyad trying to hold, you had the Dyad trying to interfere, and then Josh Briggs trying to interfere on behalf of Jensen to keep the Dyad away. A lot of moving pieces here. Obviously the all the interference, especially interference from Pretty Deadly, allowed Joe Gacy to get the win. I don't really have a whole lot to say about this in this feud, because I mean it seems like Joe Gacy is just going around picking fights with everybody right now. So it's like I feel like this match in particular was really just a setup for what happened after the match when Joe Gacy looked directly into the camera. Basically, I forget exactly what he said, but essentially he said a whole bunch of things that made Cameron Grimes believe he was talking to him, as we saw backstage. The camera cut to the locker room where a bunch of wrestlers, including Cameron Grimes, were watching the monitor and what Joe Gacy was saying. One of the other wrestlers just looked at Cameron Grimes, said, "I think he's talking about you." Cameron Grimes just, and walks away. So I feel like that's really what this was building up to, was this entire angle was really just to get to this Joe Gacy, Cameron Grimes thing right at the very end. Did you kind of get the same vibe about that, Kevin?
Yeah, I sure did. And I've never been a fan of a tag team wrestling as singles like that. Like either have the Dyad wrestle Briggs and Jensen and have Joe Gacy interfere, or don't do it at all. But I don't like when they have a tag team wrestler, especially a champion at that, wrestle as a single in a situation where you know the match is not even the point. This for me was the, if I can steal from your usual column, this was a miss, just because this was the lowest match on my ratings of the night. because, again, it wasn't about the match. It was about the post-match. And so I thought you could have done the same thing with a live mic in the middle of the ring with the dyad behind Gacy, and you didn't even have to do the match. So that's what I would say about that.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, they could have done the exact same thing and given a few minutes to a couple other matches here tonight or something like that, you know? So, I agree. I think it was the low point of the night. Saray versus Mandy Rose was the second low point of the night for me. Everything else on the show, I think, actually was a pretty solid thing. So, All right. So we'll move on from that, and we'll go to the Creeds versus the Family for the NXT tag team titles in 10 minutes and 45 seconds. The Creeds were victorious to retain their titles. We saw these two factions, Diamond Mine and the Family, have kind of been button heads the past few weeks. Roderick Strong apparently texted Damon Kemp earlier in the day to tell him that he was running late but would be there for this match. And Roderick Strong was not there for this match, and they didn't even really bring it up. They did it first during entrances, but I don't think they brought it up again. So I thought it was kind of strange where they gave some foreshadowing about Roderick Strong. I thought he was going to have some sort of interference, something to do with this match, and he didn't. So I have a feeling that is probably going to wind up playing into some angle next week, kind of furthering the story of Diamond Mine and imploding from within. So, yeah, there was that. But overall, I thought this was a pretty decent tag team match. We also saw the return of Santos Escobar after, I don't know, maybe about a month or so off screen. During the match, right towards the end of the match, actually, Carmen Electra, Electra Lopez slid a crowbar into the ring for Tony D'Angelo to use. When Tony D'Angelo went to go pick it up, Santos Escobar's hand reached out and grabbed it. He was standing outside the ring, so he kind of reached under the bottom rope and grabbed it. And that's when Tony D'Angelo realized that Santos Escobar was back. Escobar kind of pulled Tony D'Angelo towards him, towards the bottom rope, and clocked him in the face, allowing, I don't remember which one of the Creeds got the pin, but allowing one of them to pick up the win and keep their titles. So this also then led to a promo between the two Dons, if you will, the two mob bosses, Santos Escobar and Tony D'Angelo later on in the night, where it seems like Santos Escobar is not going to comply with the stipulation of his earlier match with Tony D'Angelo, where if he lost, he would need to him and the rest of his fam, him and Legado del Fantasma, rather, would need to join Tony D'Angelo's family. Doesn't look like that's going to be the case much longer. It looks like at probably Heatwave, we're going to have a match between D'Angelo and Tony D'Angelo and Santos Escobar to finally see who is the actual Don of NXT, who's the real mob boss down there. My guess is we might end up seeing Tony D'Angelo win again and get a call up for Legado. If not all of Legado, at least Santos Escobar. I hope they keep them together as a faction, but get a call up to the main roster in some way, shape, or form there. I'm just going to let you talk about what you thought of the Creeds versus the Family, and I'll give my thoughts after.
Sure. So I agree. I thought it was a solid match. I think Tony, for all of our misgivings on him early in his character building and all those vignettes outside the Italian restaurant on the docks, where we're like, oh boy, what's this going to be? You know, I think he is a very competent performer, and I think that he moves well in the ring. I think he talks well. My beef with the match is he's a singles wrestler. And this Stax guy, God bless him, you know, he's got to work on his accent. He's just sort of there. You know what I mean? Like I just, this is sort of the opposite situation of the Jensen Gacy match where, yeah, they're together, but D'Angelo at his core is a singles wrestler. And so to put him in a tag team with largely a nobody, I think just sort of dials Tony down a little bit. And it sort of takes away from his done-ness, because to me, if you want to talk about body language and sort of persona, Santos gives off way more of the Don vibe, because he's the one that's happy to be dressed in the suit while Legato wrestles for him, where Tony is wrestling. And if you're a Don, like, you have henchmen to do your dirty work. Now, I know one of the henchmen was cut a few weeks back, and so that's maybe thrown a loop in things. But
you mean he was murdered? He was murdered a few weeks back.
Yes. He was given the cement shoes and thrown over the bridge. But I think that's where I believe ability lapses, in just build Tony as the singles wrestler, build him as the title contender. You don't need to waste time with pairing him with a less talented henchman just to have tag matches. Especially if, again, the point of that match was less about Creed brothers and more about building the Santos story afterwards. Because I think then that also defines the Creed brothers down a little bit, to say, well, you're just pawns in sort of the larger storyline that's going on around you. But if I can add 2 cents, I did use the power of the interweb to help answer our previous question from Ryan. But Julius wrestled at Duke and placed 6th at Nationals. That was the best he ever did. Brutus apparently went undefeated at Otterbein, but nothing I read said anything about championships. So maybe he was wrestling at Otterbein during COVID. So it is possible that he got his regular season in, and then COVID hit and he didn't get to do a national championship. And then Bobby Stevenson was a national qualifier at the University of Minnesota. So again, all very, very solid wrestlers, but nothing by way of championships that I could find online. So I just want to make sure I close that loop from Ryan's question earlier in the night. But that ends my talk on Tony and the family and Diamond Mine.
All right. Sounds good to me. So I kind of disagree a little bit with what you were saying about Tony D'Angelo and Stack. So I will say, agree that I think right now him wrestling with just one, or him wrestling side by side with Stack, rather than having 2 henchmen do his dirty work, is definitely a hindrance for Tony D'Angelo. Obviously, like you said, of course, 2 Dimes did something to piss off somebody at NXT, and he got himself fired. But obviously that kind of left the D'Angelo family scrambling a little bit, left, you know, NXT trying to figure out storylines and whatnot. But I think there's an easy, there's a couple easy ways to remedy this. I think somebody to fill in the empty space that 2 Dimes left, whether it be somebody currently on the roster that they could kind of transition a gimmick to. I can't think of anyone off of top of my head that would be, but, or if it's somebody down in the PC that's, maybe they're not quite ready, but they're almost ready. I mean, God, you guys put Nikita Lyons out there, put out somebody else that's not necessarily ready, but make them feel important. Give us some more story and give us some more background about not just the new 2 Dimes, whoever that is, but also Stax as well. As you said, right now, they just feel like henchmen. They don't, or Stax anyway, just feels like a henchman. He doesn't feel important by any stretch of the imagination. What I feel like they should do is establish Stax as some sort of a competitor that might even challenge for the North American title. And that way it doesn't feel like, Tony D'Angelo is kind of with this nobody. It's just kind of bringing him down. And that's what it feels like Stax is. I think something like that could certainly work. But I think
Stax feels like at any house show, he's also the guy in the black security shirt. You know what I mean? Like you just
exactly.
Said, haven't defined him where you could sub out any of the security guys from Braun's segment to be the new 2 Dimes, and we'd be none the wiser.
Oh, yeah. If you put 2 Dimes in a lineup with, 8 other guys, I could not pick him out of that lineup. I would have no idea what he looked like. I can barely think of what he looks like right now, you know? So I completely agree with you there. Okay, let's go to Axiom versus Duke Hudson. We talked about this a little bit, where Duke Hudson was kind of picking on Axiom backstage. Axiom and, you know, Duke Hudson end up, you know, they kind of got into it backstage. It led to this match, with Duke Hudson essentially just kind of like, I don't know, I felt like he was just bullying Axiom the entire match, just kind of kicking his ass, throwing him all over the ring. Axiom just kind of got lucky towards the end. Duke Hudson was going for a razor's edge. Axiom was able to get a Hurricane Rana out of it, reverse in a Hurricane Rana and pick up a pin shortly thereafter. And so he kind of just got like I felt like he got lucky is kind of how I felt about it. But overall, I don't think it was a bad match. I think Axiom, I mean, A-Kid, we know he's put on some phenomenal matches on the indies. He put on some great matches here in NXT, or well, at least one good match here in NXT. So I feel like Axiom has all of the makings to be a cool character, but after tonight, I'm kind of like, I'm not sure where they're going with it. I feel like he did not get enough offense in to feel like a superhero. He really just felt like an underdog that kind of got lucky to me. I know we talked a little bit about this earlier, but do you have anything to add on the on this match, Kevin?
Yeah, just because you brought it up, the Duke's razor's edge duration to me was the equivalent of guys in a ladder match conveniently forgetting how to climb a ladder in the middle of the match. Like, he just held it too long and was showbunny. You're like, okay, you know something's going to happen here. But it very much had a similar pacing / lack of awareness vibe as men and women in ladder matches that conveniently forget how to walk up rungs of a ladder. So that's all I wanted to add to that.
No, fair enough. And I agree. I mean, he's got a great razor's edge when he pulls it off. But yeah, tonight you could definitely tell they were planning, planning something. Hold on one second. All right. In that case, my mute button was my friend, so you guys didn't have to hear me cough. So we'll back up here to Saray versus Mandy Rose. 5 minutes, 36 seconds. Saw Mandy Rose pick up win over Saray. We don't have a whole lot to really talk about on this match for me personally. You know, we talked a little bit about it earlier in the night. You know, this match really just came about from last week. You know, Saray kind of inserted herself into a Toxic Attraction interview segment, and yeah, Mandy Rose took offense to it and kind of wound up leading to this match here tonight. It was probably the least consequential thing on the show. There wasn't a title involved. The feud is, if you can even call it a feud, is like essentially brand new. So it didn't feel super important to me. And I don't know, in my opinion anyway, if you're going to have a champion in a non-title match, you kind of want it to sort of feel somewhat important. And this didn't to me. This just kind of felt like it was just another match on the show. Well, just another match on a different show, I guess, because just another match on the show would have been better. So I hate saying that, but, you know, kind of call it like I see it. So, you know, overall, I mean, the wrestling wasn't bad. I mean, they put on an entertaining match. The crowd did not seem to be that invested in it at all. I feel like they were sitting down, kind of sitting on their hands for the most of the match. They did kind of come alive for the finish, but I think that it was kind of telling that the crowd, especially that crowd, was pretty flat for this match. It didn't really work on a few different levels. It just seemed like it was too small of an occasion for Mandy Rose to be wrestling as champion. You know, it kind of, I guess, really was more of a showcase for her in a way, you know, get her a win or something, but the whole thing really didn't work for me overall. Kevin, what about you?
Yeah, I'm with you. And I've got two sort of blocks of thoughts. The first one is I was really excited when they brought Saray in. I'll kind of go back to some Star Wars nerddom, and I know we've addressed this before, but like, it's almost like WWE has the rule, the Sith rule of two, where you can't have two active Japanese women hot at the same time, because Io, like Kairi had just left, and like Io was big when they brought Sarray in, and so she kind of got put on the back burner. And now that Io's gone, they didn't, like, I want more for her. Now, I trust the backstage folks, right? Like, typically, people who get pushes show that they deserve them, and people that don't for one reason or another. So I'm not saying it's nobody's fault in terms of, well, why not? But, like, my hopes for her were much higher when they brought her in because of how much fanfare she came in with from the Japanese scene. And so they sort of stopped and goed and stopped and goed and stopped and goed with her. And I just really want more for her. To flip that, and here's sort of the hot take that could make me all kinds of enemies. I'm not a Mandy Rose fan, and I don't think she's a good wrestler. In the last three or four matches I've watched of hers, never mind interference, never mind toxic attraction, like butting their heads in, I feel like matches, I don't feel like she carries matches in the way that other veteran women can carry matches, where there always seem to be timing issues. There seems to be hesitation on like transition moves. She just doesn't, she always sort of seems a half step off. And that's no disrespect to the performer. She works very hard at what she does. You know, she has a great social media profile and influence, but as your top champion, I think there are a few more women that are better performers than her. And I usually face Kevin here as going heel just to say, like, I'm just sort of over it. And, like, let's get the belt on a performer who wrestles, who has more than sort of five moves. And let's sort of take it in a new direction, because I'm always worried that someone's going to get hurt with Mandy. And maybe that's not fair. She is really good, and it's the other person's fault. But I just always feel like I see glitches in the system when she wrestles that, to me, aren't indicative of your top champion, regardless of gender. And so I guess that's sort of my hot take that could get me some negative ads. I don't know.
Well, I don't think it's going to get you anything negative from at least the hosts of this show anyway. Because, I know Kelly, Bruce, and I are right there with you. You know, Mandy, excuse me again. This frog in the back of my throat that does not want to go away. I feel like Mandy Rose has done a better job than I would have given her any credit for when she won the championship or even showed up in NXT for that matter. But I completely agree with you. I mean, she's an okay wrestler. She's a good wrestler. She obviously works very hard at what she does. And I feel like she certainly improved even just being down in NXT, but she's not up to the caliber of somebody like Alba Fire or, you know, I was going to say Io Shirai, but that she's now Io Sky on the main roster. There were certainly other women on the NXT roster, or still on the NXT roster, that I feel like could probably do a better job. Zoe Stark being, you know, one of them. Basically, long story short, I agree with what you're saying. I don't think it's unfounded either. I mean, she definitely has exactly what they were looking for NXT 2.0. You know, she's got the looks, she's got the sex appeal, and they wanted to lean into that for NXT 2.0. So, I mean, there's that, but I don't know. I feel like at this point it's kind of run its course. It feels a little stale, a little stagnant. And I would kind of like to see, you know, somebody like Zoe Stark win the title, take it off of take it off Mandy Rose, and then either see Toxic Attraction try to chase these titles for a little while and then get called up, or just immediately get called up. I feel like the main roster really could use and benefit from, you know, three heel women, a heel faction. You know, either one of the two main rosters could certainly benefit from it. So, that's kind of my take on on that situation there. What else do we have tonight? We also had Nathan Frazier versus Carmelo Hayes in an open challenge for Carmelo Hayes' U.S. title. This match went 5 minutes and 41 seconds. Started when Trick Williams and Carmelo Hayes came out to wish Carmelo Hayes a happy birthday, which was today, August 2nd, 2022. I forgot to say it at the top of the show that that was the date that this show is for. So I'll say it an hour and 39 minutes into the show. This open chat, yeah, so like I said, started off like that with Carmelo Hayes and Trick Williams celebrating Carmelo Hayes' birthday, and they said, what better way to celebrate than with an open challenge for the North American title? And, you know, they basically signaled for somebody to come down to the ring. Giovanni Vinci's music played, and we saw him start to make his way down to the ring, and I was actually getting myself kind of pumped for this match. I'm not going to lie. I like what Giovanni Vinci's been doing since his rebrand from Fabian Aichner. And I obviously like Carmelo Hayes. I thought they were going to have a hell of a match when all of a sudden Nathan Frazier ran down to the ring and jumped in the ring because one important thing that I left out, Carmelo Hayes said the first person to get in this ring would have a match with him, not necessarily the first person to hit their music. So Nathan Frazier just bolted past Giovanni Vinci, jumped into the ring, and, well, that was the match. Vinci ended up joining commentary with Vic Joseph and Wade Barrett and provided his his take and thoughts on this match, which I thought was kind of a cool touch. This was a fantastic match. It was it only went 5 minutes and 41 seconds, like I said, but I thought this was great. A lot of just a lot of high impact flippy moves. I thought they had some great chemistry together. This did not seem like a developmental match to me. This came off to me like a black and gold, high octane, match. That's really what this felt like to me. I really dug it. Carmelo Hayes wound up, winning or retaining the title after some interference from Giovanni Vinci. And then after the match, Vinci kind of, He lied down, got down on the ring and basically picked Nathan Frazier up by the head and posed for the camera as he does. I have a feeling we're going to wind up seeing some more interaction between Frazier and Vinci. Whether or not Carmelo Hayes in the North American title is in the picture, I'm not sure yet, but I do think we're going to see a feud between those two simply because Vinci was cost a title match. I mean, Frazier kind of did steal the title match right from under his nose, but also because, Frazier got beat down at the end of the match. I think both of them are going to take offense to the other one's actions, and we'll see that feud kind of flesh out over the next few weeks. Kevin, on Frazier versus Hayes.
Yeah, I was a big fan like you were. I think I really liked Frazier, and I think that's it'll be interesting to see how they kind of let him breathe and develop. Triple H notwithstanding, like I think that he's been developing a little momentum despite that. And so I'm excited just to kind of see where that goes. I think if they go that route for the next PLE, I think a triple threat between Vinci and Frazier and Carmelo could be really good. And you wouldn't even have to put a stipulation on it, just the triple threat. And I think you're going to see some really athletic, really good chain wrestling, really good just movement that could either kick the PLE off, or it could be sort of that middle, hey, let's get the energy back up. But I think a triple threat with those three guys could be really good.
All right. So we did talk about the opening match already quite a bit with the callers, the caller portion. The opening match obviously being the Fatal 4-Way Tag Team match. Do you have any other thoughts to add on that? I know I think I've pretty much talked about
I'm
about.
I'm good on that one.
Okay, yeah. Cool. So with that said, then we're coming up towards the end of the show here. We have a few things that we did not necessarily touch on. I think what just to kind of keep things spicy and interesting, why don't I have you pick out a couple things that you might want to talk about? We'll talk about them, give our thoughts on them, and we'll go to bed. Just not together.
Well, listen,
obviously.
I would say here's what I would have us talk about. So there were a couple of segments that were tied to things we already talked about, so we don't really need to go that route. So like the Von Wagner video segment, we don't need to chat about because we already talked about the match. The Carter Chance celebration, I think we don't need to mess with. And then the Toxic Attraction blow up, I think we can go away from. So the things that I would offer for your thoughts, not so much the Diamond Mine backstage, but just Apollo's pop in. So I don't know maybe what you thought about what they're doing with Apollo there. The Tiffany Stratton video package was a unique thing that didn't have a tie-in anywhere else. And then the only other one that didn't have any sort of other tie-ins was Roxanne Perez,
Roxanne Jade.
Cora Jade, Mandy Rose. So you want to, I can offer my thoughts on those three segments first, or if you want to talk and then I can respond.
Oh, go nuts, man. Go nuts. You're the guest. We'll let you go first.
Ah, look at that. Or at least the moderator of the late show main event.
Yes.
I'm happy that Apollo's back in NXT. I'm glad that he's dropped all of the gimmickry that they saddled him with towards the end of the main roster run, his most recent one. So I really like him as a singles competitor. I think he's sort of the new sort of veteran presence that is homegrown, that can help some of these young guys really move along. And so the fact that he sort of gave his rub to the Creed guys, the Creed brothers, was good for me. I like that. So I'm excited to see what they do with him. I'm kind of meh on Tiffany Stratton. I'll be interested to hear what you have to say, but I don't think a relive your gymnastics glory days video package was the best way to present her. And then as far as the Roxanne Perez thing goes, I just really hope they get back to her quick, because she really stood out in that women's tournament. They gave her the championships with Cora, only for Cora to flip immediately. And so with the momentum that she had, I don't want her cooling off. And even though now we're moving towards a Cora Roxanne, presumably at least a three-match feud, I think she's too good and carries too high of a pedigree for them to just sort of forget about the momentum they built with her. So I guess that would be my wrap-up three segments before we take it home. So what do you think?
So I'll start with the Diamond Mine and Apollo Crews segment. So I've talked about it a few times now on the show over the past few weeks here, but I'm also glad to see Apollo Crews back in NXT. I'm wondering what his direction is going to be down here, because, you know, and I said this almost verbatim last week, you know, AJ Styles, Natalya, you know, they came down to NXT. They had, you know, quick little feud, and then they were back, right? And Dolph Ziggler, for that matter. Quick feud, back up on the main roster. And I don't believe their WWE.com superstar profiles ever actually switched from, you know, the brands that they were actually on, whether it be Raw or SmackDown. Apollo Crews, he's been down here for a few weeks, maybe even a couple months now at this point. He's laid claim to the NXT title. He's had some weird vigilante vignette. He's inserted himself in a few different feuds here and there, but he hasn't really done anything of note. And his profile on WWE.com brands him a 2.0 wrestler. He's an NXT 2.0 guy. So I have a feeling he's going to be down. He's down here like longish term, which personally I'm totally fine with. I love Apollo Creed. I hated the shit he was doing on the main roster with Commander Aziz. I thought it was so dumb. You know, if you're going to have somebody talk in a gimmick like that, the only one that I think could get away with it was King Booker when he won King of the Ring and he started talking in that, you know, god awful English accent. That was entertaining. It was fun, but my God, the whole Nigerian prince thing was just, it was terrible. So I'm glad to see him getting away from that. What I thought was really weird about this tonight was, you know, Apollo Crews comes in, he's, you know, shooting the shit with Diamond Mine, wants to give him some advice, and basically says, hey, watch your back. Yeah, watch your back during that match. And I figured he was talking about Roderick Strong. And then later on in the night, we had Diamond Mine, you know, and Damon Kemp talking, and Roderick Strong wasn't going to show up, you know, and then he didn't show up for the match. I thought that Apollo Crews was like the beginning of the thread for Roderick Strong to wind up interfering and cost the Creeds the title, or almost cost the Creeds the titles, you know, or something like that. So it's weird. I want to know, like, what the heck he was talking about, like, watch your backs, because I didn't feel like there was anything that really took place during that match where the Creeds would have had to watch their back. If anything, it was D'Angelo had to watch his back from Escobar. So it was just a little weird. And I don't know what he meant by that. Maybe they'll come back to that next week or something. But yeah, that's really, yeah, that was kind of the biggest takeaway for me there, was just like, what was he talking about? Then I forget the other two things you brought up already.
The Stratton video package, Stratton. And so the Roxanne Perez backstage.
So I completely missed the Stratton video package. I did start the show a little bit late tonight, so I was skipping commercials and things. So like if it came like before or after a commercial, I might have skipped over it by accident. I didn't actually see it. So but from what you were saying, it was kind of a video package on like her like childhood athletic career?
Well, no, she was present day in a gymnastics leotard doing several tumbling passes, talking about how I'm great, I don't need to waste my time with losers. And then like the last line of the bit was, time for me to go shopping, bye, and like walks off camera. So like, If you're going to have her flaunt her status, why are you putting her in a gymnastics leotard present day? Like it was a flop all the way around.
Yeah. That's okay. That's weird to me because like, to me, that says, okay, here I am. I'm in a leotard. I'm doing my gymnastic stuff that I've been doing my entire life. Now I'm going to go shopping. I don't give a shit about wrestling, you know? And that's kind of the opposite of, I wouldn't say necessarily the opposite of what she's been about, but she's talked about being a fierce competitor and, you know, wanting to, you know, climb up in WWE and all of that. Obviously shopping has come up before too. But yeah, that's weird. I kind of want to go back and watch that now and actually kind of see it, but it almost feels like it's I don't want to say complete different direction, but a bit of a different direction for her. To me, it sounds like, you know, reliving your glory days and not necessarily living in the moment, but I have to actually see it to kind of make an actual analysis on it. But is that kind of what you were getting from it as well?
Yes. Yes. I would say if you choose to go back and watch it, prepare to be underwhelmed.
I mean, most likely I probably won't go back and watch it unless I, you know, there's a, on like their YouTube or something like that. It happens to pop up.
Because here's the deal. Like, If the point was to continue to reinforce her character as the rich, privileged, I've always been the best because I've had the best and now I've got money, so I'm like, then you can do that at a mall in Orlando. You can do it. You could have done that 14 different ways that was not her in a gymnastics leotard doing some stuff. Like, it just... The message and the visual did not match at all.
Yeah. Huh. All right. Yeah. Maybe I will go back and watch that and kind of take a look. But yeah, it doesn't sound like it did her any favors tonight anyway. And the last thing that you talked about was Roxanne Jade Rose. So I'm really kind of curious to see where this winds up. Excuse me again. Yeah, I'm curious to see where this goes because I really want to see Jade versus Perez. I want to see that one-on-one match. I don't necessarily want to see it work its way into a triple threat, with Mandy Rose, added in there. However, that could potentially be something we see in our cards. We also have Zoe Stark that's also got a claim to, being number one contender right now. We actually saw a backstage segment tonight where Mandy Rose approached Cora Jade and asked her to try and take Zoe Stark out again, as she did last week. In the ring, she left Zoe Stark lying. She asked, she being Mandy Rose, asked Cora Jade backstage if she'd be willing to try and inflict some damage on her again and take out the number one contender, because if she did, then Cora Jade, as the runner-up in that battle royal, would have come out, would have wound up challenging Mandy Rose for the title at Heatwave. So there's still the possibility that, like, next week we wind up seeing Cora Jade try to take Zoe Stark out. I'm kind of wondering if we wind up getting a fatal four-way between Stark, Perez, Jade, and Rose at Heatwave, because they're all in the title picture right now. They all have something, whether it be a beef with Mandy Rose or a beef with each other, another person, kind of Jade and Perez there. Everybody kind of has some sort of involvement here, and all of those stories kind of sort of tie together. So with the women's title being that common thread that's tying them all together. So I'm kind of wondering if that's the direction we go. I think next week we'll probably wind up getting the answer to that, because I don't think they'll do it during the go home show for Heatwave. But who knows, they might. But I think next week we'll probably get an answer to that and see. But if I had to guess, going on the information we got right now, I'm going to guess it's going to be a fatal four-way at Heatwave between those four for the women's title. That's kind of what I'm thinking there. Any follow-up on that, or shall we go home?
No, I think we should probably go home. All I wanted to say is I just got a text that legendary broadcaster Vin Scully just passed away.
Oh, wow. That sucks. Well, on that, I guess on that somber note, we're going to wrap up the show. So as I said earlier, I'm Nate Lindberg. You can find me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg. I write the NXT hits and misses, and I do have one up for tonight's show up on pwtorch.com. So please check that out if you'd like to. Kevin, give us a shout.
Sure. Well, I'm Kevin Catania, and again, it's always such a pleasure to talk wrestling with you guys. I'm always honored to be included. You can, of course, find me on Twitter at KP Catania, and I would love to talk mental health, emotional intelligence, wrestling, magic, tabletop games, and anything in that realm I am ready and willing to discourse on. So thanks again, Nate. It was really a pleasure, and I look forward to talking with you guys soon.
No, as always, man, a pleasure. Glad to have you. I'm sure we'll have you back at some point in the near future. But until next time, guys, to steal a line from Kelly, because I can't think of anything better to say right now, we'll see you in 7.